ജയംവിഷുപാദ ബ്രഹ്മഹംസ പരിപ്രാജാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര സദസ്സു ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയ ചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹർഷിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദ ജയം മിഥിലിതാ പ്രവിഷ്ട വിഷ്ണുപാദ ബ്രഹ്മഹംസ പരിപ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര സദസ്സു ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാനന്ദ സരസ്വതി മഹർഷിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദ അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദക്കി നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്കി പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദക്കി ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ടഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനകി വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാംകി മായപ്പൂർ ധാംകി മധുരപുരി ധാംകി ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാംകി ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാംകി ഗംഗമായിക്കി യമുനമായിക്കി തുളസീദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമേത ഭക്തവൃന്ദക്ക് ഗോവർ പ്രേമനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബ്ലി ബോഡീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബ്ലി ബോഡീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബ്ലി ബോഡീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരു ആൻഡ് ശ്രീ ഗൗരംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീല പ്രഭുപാദ നമോംശുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഗുരുദലി ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാനന്ദ സ്വാമി ഇതി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സാരസ്വതി ദേവി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാണി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണി which we used to have before, the same verses. Om Parthaya Pradibodhidam Bhagavadam Narayana Swayam Vyasena Kradidam Purana Muninam Madhye Mahabharatam Advaidam Radarshini Bhagavadi Ashtadishadhyayini Ambatvamani Sandadami Bhagavati Devavadveshini Namostu Devyasa Vishala Buddhe Ullara Vindaya Patra Netra ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃത ദുഹേ നമഃ സർവോനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സ സുധീർഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണഗദാധ്രതജലാഗാന്ധാരനീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനീകർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാവികർണഘോരമകര ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സൂതീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തകകേശവ പാരാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കണം നാനാധ്യാനകേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹപ്പേടീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാദ് ഭാരതപങ്കജക്കലിമലപ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മുഖം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയരേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാവരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്വന്ദി ദിവ്യൈ സ്തവൈ വേദൈ സാംഗപദൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർഗായന്തിയം സാമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തിയം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരവിനൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ So, after a very, very long time, we are coming back to Bhagavad Gita today. And somehow or the other, we got busy with Bhagavadam all these years. And apart from that, another thing is, over years, I've also understood that how difficult it is Bhagavad Gita is. Generally, people think Bhagavad Gita is very straightforward. Bhagavad Gita is not a straightforward book. It's the most difficult book of all the Upanishads. And when you look at others' commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita, you can see the depth of knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita's history is like this, that it is in the Mahabharata, first thing. In Mahabharata, there are three important spiritual discourses. And they have come through all these 5,000 years by all the learned scholars. They have taken it seriously. And it became a a topic of discussion for all time in spiritual life. And one of that is Bhagavad Gita. The other two is one Sanal Sujada Maharshi's discussions with Dhritarashtra, which is called Sanal Sujadiyam. And the third one is Vishnu Sahasranama, Thousand Names of Vishnu. So these three things in Mahabharatam stayed all the way through, and people always used them for their spiritual development. That is how the history goes. So, Sanal Sujadiyam, Bhagavad Gita, and Vishnu Sahasranama. These three literature were always revered by the followers of Sanatana Dharma, and they have derived immense benefit from all three of them. So, it is with that background we have to remember this, that importance of Bhagavad Gita as a Shastram, and more than anything else, historically, it is a text of knowledge. Whatever we may say about it, at the end of the day, Bhagavad Gita is the summary of all the Vedic knowledge. It's packed into one literature, which is Bhagavad Gita, and Ajarya Swamiji call it as Samastha Vedartha Sara Sangraha Bhudham. That is his one word of addressing Bhagavad Gita is like that. Samastha Veda Artha Sara Sangraha Bhudham. All the essence of the Vedic knowledge is completely condensed into one package, and that is Bhagavad Gita. So, going back into the history, if you go back into the history, over this 5,000 years, Bhagavad Gita always remained in the forefront, as although there are so many Upanishads who have supported Bhagavad Gita, from where the Upanishad's knowledge has come into Bhagavad Gita in many ways, Katha Upanishad, Chandogya Upanishad, Shvetashvatram, and all other Upanishads also, a lot of messages have come, verses have come from there to Bhagavad Gita. But still, Bhagavad Gita's position is very unique in the sense that the first Acharya who took it very seriously, Bhagavad Gita, was Acharya Swamiji himself. And he commented on Bhagavad Gita. That was his first commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And it stayed in the forefront of everybody. And the result, impact was that what Shankara did later on, Ramanujar also followed the same thing. He took also Bhagavad Gita. And later on when Madhvacharya came, he also took Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita was, Bhagavad Gita was the key text for all the three traditions. Even though Ramanujar took Vishnupuranam also, but Ramanujar also gave more importance to Bhagavad Gita than any other text. So Shankara, Ramanujar and Madhva, all three of them who propounded the three different philosophical schools of thought, Advaitam, Vishishtadvaitam and Dvaitam, all three of them accepted Bhagavad Gita's position as a book of knowledge. It was always been like that. The book of knowledge, it is because it is the science of the soul, and you will see when we go through further, you will see there that the importance of Bhagavad Gita, because it is the science of the soul. If you want to understand what the soul is, the science of the soul is in the Bhagavad Gita. So keeping that all in the background, if you study Bhagavad Gita, you will see there that the Acharya Swamiji began, he wrote a long introduction to Bhagavad Gita in his commentary, and our Srila Prabhupada also took it from there, some of the things, and put that into Prabhupada's commentary as well. So Bhagavad Gita's importance stayed like that during their time. That means Shankaracharya's time, Ramanuja and Madhva. Madhvacharya, that means 8th, 11th, 13th centuries. Bhagavad Gita was considered to be a book of knowledge and it was accepted that way. It didn't change. It was not considered as a book of Karma Yogam or Bhakti Yogam or anything like that. It was considered as a book of jnana, knowledge. Spiritual knowledge, the text is Bhagavad Gita. That's how it was accepted. Later on, the famous, another famous commentary came from Jnaneshwari. Jnaneshwari's commentary, famous known as Jnaneshwari. Jnaneshwari is also based on the similar lines like Acharya Swamiji's Advaita Siddhantam. On the same way, Jnaneshwari was also written. So, by now, a lot of time has gone, and by the time independence movement started, things started changing with Bhagavad Gita also. Because everyone realized that without Bhagavad Gita's help, it will be very difficult to penetrate into the society and to inspire them to fight for the independence. And that is how you can see at that time, Bal Gangadhar Tilak, who brought Bhagavad Gita into it, he commented Bhagavad Gita on the understanding that karma, giving importance to karma yoga more than the bhakti yoga or jnana yoga. So this is how the shift started slowly. So till then it was considered purely as a book of spiritual knowledge. Knowledge was the key factor in Bhagavad Gita. Bhakti is spoken, karma yoga is also there. But jnanam of the truth, absolute truth, Krishna, how it was presented in the Bhagavad Gita was accepted by all the great predecessor acharyas as a book of knowledge, not any other way. So since then, Mahatma Gandhi came at the time to the independence movement. So following the same Bal Gangadhar Tilak's commentary on Karma Yoga, Mahatma Gandhi also took it as a book of Karma Yoga. So they used Bhagavad Gita in their pursuit for independence and to encourage people to come to the path of yoga processes, of particularly Karma Yoga, and stressing the importance of looking through the eyes of Bhagavad Gita, the importance of independence movement, and in that way it inspired a lot of people. So since then the shift has started. That means 5,000 years ago in Mahabharatam, Vedavyasa Maharshi incorporated Bhagavad Gita into Mahabharatam, along with Sanal Sujatiyam, which was spoken by Sanal Sujata Maharshi to Dhritarashtra. And then Bhishma, while instructing Yudhishthira, gave these 1,000 names of Vishnu, Vishnu Sahasranama. So these three texts stayed very prominent in the society for thousands of years, nearly 4,000 years. It stayed like that. And when the Acharyas commented on Bhagavad Gita, based on Advaita Siddhantam, Vishishtadvaita Siddhantam, and Dvaita Siddhantam, the position of Bhagavad Gita didn't change. All three of them accepted Bhagavad Gita as a book of knowledge. Book of knowledge, that is how very science of the soul and spiritual life is Bhagavad Gita. So that's how important Bhagavad Gita is. But then what happened during the independence period, slowly it started moving into, people started talking about different yoga processes. Karma Yoga was spoken by Bal Gangadhar Tilak, and then later on Mahatma Gandhi also. And then in the recent times we can see that different Vaishnava Sampradayams, which come later, they started also talking in terms of bhakti, and Srila Prabhupada also commented in lines of bhakti. But historically speaking, the three great acharyas who laid the foundation for the Sanatana Dharmam, they all considered Bhagavad Gita as a book of knowledge. You know? And that is how the background of the thing. Another thing one has to realize is this, that Mahabharatam Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled. And what is Mahabharatam? It is his family story, isn't it? If you look at it carefully, Mahabharatam is nothing but his family story, is it not? The two sons, Dhritarashtra and Pandu, his own children, Vidura also, keeping these three people in the front, the fight started between Dhritarashtra and Pandu, his own sons. And that then developed into Mahabharata war.
that developed into Mahabharata, the book itself. So practically you can see that this Bhagavad Gita is a part of that Mahabharata, which is nothing but Vedavyasa Maharshi's family story. It is his autobiography, you can say. In that, Bhagavad Gita comes as a part of that. The whole Vedic Sanadana Dharma in these last, the end of Dwapara Yugam to right now, is based on Vedavyasa Maharshi's life story. He and his family life. Dhritarashtra was born, Pandu was born, and then Vidura was born from three different wives, and then this problem all happened among them. And that became Mahabharata at the end, is it not? So that is how it happened. So it is actually Vedavyasa Maharshi's history itself. It is his own story. In another form, it has come like this. And Mahabharata, and it happened to be that Bhagavad Gita happened to be a part of that. So, I know you have all read Bhagavad Gita, probably once, twice, thrice, I don't know. But you all are familiar with Bhagavad Gita, and most of the people understand Bhagavad Gita on a certain level. The verses, the translation, the purports and all that. But when you read Bhagavad Gita from a position of, as we'll see later, that the purpose, why Krishna has spoken Bhagavad Gita, all great personalities have a way of doing things. They will tell you in summary something, then they will expand on that, and then they will summarize it again and tell you the conclusions. This is their system. Krishna also followed that same process. Initially he spoke the summary altogether, what he was going to talk about. Then he spoke about the questions were raised. Arjuna raised a lot of questions, and he clarified all that. And finally he concluded with the 18th chapter, which is about Moksha Sannyasa Yogam, it is called. Now, normally when people who are completely not in touch with Vedic literature, they will think in a particular way about everything. For example, Varnashrama Dharmam. Something that people have understood in a particular way, because they are reading from the book. That is the problem. When you're just reading from the book, what the book says, you will accept it as it is. Isn't it? That's normal. It's understandable. That's the way it will be. So when you pick up from one book something and thinking that that alone is everything related to that subject, Varnashrama Dharmam, then it's quite likely that you may get only a partial picture of the whole thing. The science of the soul is so subtle. It is so subtle that some of the things what the great personalities have brought out from Bhagavad Gita is beyond our understanding. It is so subtle and so deep that we will not sometimes even understand what they are saying. It will require a lot of time to invest in thinking about it and trying to grasp what they are pointing out to us. Such is the subtle side of Bhagavad Gita. And this we decide now we'll do the 18th chapter first before we go into the beginning. The reason for that is Bhagavad Gita talks about sannyasam, and the last chapter is titled as Moksha Sannyasa Yogam. That's the name of the last chapter, right? But through Moksha Sannyasa Yogam, Krishna talks about a sannyasam which is different from the sannyasam what we have read in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam and in the Ekadasha skandham what Krishna talks about Varnashrama Dharmam. What Krishna spoke about sannyasam there. Here, the sannyasam has a different concept altogether in this 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is not exactly the way Krishna has spoken about sannyasam based on Varnashrama Dharmam in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Bhagavatam in the 7th canto when Narada Maharshi and Yudhishthira had a conversation in the Rajasuyam, and later on in the Ekadasi Skandam, when Krishna spoke to Uddhava about Varnashrama Dharma. Their sannyasam is spoken in the traditional Varnashrama system, sannyasam. Here in Bhagavad Gita, what you find in the 18th chapter, sannyasam spoken on a completely different level. Apart from these two, there is also sannyasam given from the institutions. It is called institutional sannyasam. That means people who join any particular modern institutions, whether it is ISKCON or Sri Sri Ravi Shankar's Art of Living, or Amritananda Mayi's mission, Chimaya mission, all different missions, they all have sannyasis. Their sannyasam is called what we call it as institutional sannyasam. So sannyasam alone changes its nature when it changes from one person to another and one institution to another, and their methods of sannyasam are different. And that you will get that understanding when you study this 18th chapter. What Krishna has to say about sannyasam. So we will go into that, the 18th chapter, to understand this, and then gradually you will start thinking about it. If you keep thinking about it, you will start seeing the diversity in all these things. Even when you talk about sannyasam, people normally, when we are not exposed to all the different aspects of sannyasam, generally what do we think? We think sannyasam means he wears dhoti in a particular way, with saffron dhoti, and then he has got a danda, he has got a shikha, and he travels all the time. And a perception like that comes to ordinary people like that about sannyasam, is it not? If you study this 18th chapter, you will see what Krishna has to say about sannyasam. What does sannyasam means? And there itself you will start analyzing, and you will start realizing that your own perception was not perfect in all these things. So that's why it's so important to understand sannyasam through Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna had to say about it. And similarly, what we have heard before in the 7th canto and in the 11th canto, when Krishna spoke from the Varnashrama Dharma aspect, what sannyasam means. Is it not? So you got to put together all these things to understand sannyasam properly. People who join institutions, they will only see the institutional system. That's all they know about. They won't think about the other side of it, that there is another side to sannyasam like this. That knowledge won't be there in them. So that's a bit of a background. And Acharya Swamiji, when he wrote his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, he began like this: Chindam Prakriti Siddhyartham Ubolghatam Prajakshade. Ubalghatam means introduction, you can say in English, but basically what that means is that something that leads into leads your thoughts in a particular direction about a particular topic. That's how they call it. Ubalghatam means that it makes you to think in a particular way. Your line of thought goes in a particular way about a particular topic. And whatever that drives your thoughts into that direction is called Ubodghanam. Om Narayana Paravyakta Dandam Avyakta Sambhavam Andasyandastime Loka Saptadvipa Chamedini. The first verse itself in the introduction, he said that Om Ityagaksharam Brahmam, in the Bhagavad Gita that verse comes, that in the 8th chapter, in the 13th verse, that so Narayana Krishna Param Avyaktam Andam Avyakta Sambhavam. This word Avyaktam comes in Bhagavad Gita many times. Sometimes we don't understand what this word Avyaktam means. Avyaktam means it's not Vyaktam. That's all we know. It's not Vyaktam. Vyaktam means clear, but it's not clear. Avyaktam. So in the 2nd chapter, in the 25th verse, Krishna says that what avyaktam means. Avyaktam means that is beyond the sensual perception. That's how Krishna calls it. That cannot be perceived through senses. That knowledge which cannot be perceived through senses is called avyattam. It cannot be perceived through senses. Normally, most of us we are used to acquiring knowledge through senses, is it not? That's a general method in this world. We go to college, university, everywhere. People acquire the knowledge through senses. And that's the only thing what we know. But there is a level of knowledge higher than the sensual knowledge that is acquired through senses. And that is called avyattam. Avyattam. And this will be the most difficult part for most of the modern society. Modern society will find it very difficult to accept it. Can the knowledge be acquired without senses? That itself is a question for them, because they are not familiar with it, isn't it? But there is knowledge beyond senses, beyond sense perception, way of acquiring the knowledge. And that knowledge, which is acquired in that way, is avyaktam. So, in the second chapter, Krishna says that. So, from this avyaktam came the universe, Brahmandam. So, and is also addressed, because it came from Lord Brahma, is addressed as Hiranyagarbham. So Hiranyagarbham, from him, that which is also called Hiranyagarbham. Brahmandam is called as Hiranyagarbham. Brahma comes through Brahma, Lord Brahma. And from avyaktam came this Brahmandam universe, right? And Ajari Swami is saying here is that Narayana or Krishna is above this avyaktam even. Even above avyaktam. All these earthly planet and all the other worlds what we talk about is included within this Brahmandam or the universe, right? So he began it like this, that so understanding Krishna is not so easy like the way we think about it. People are generally used to thinking that Krishna is just came to Vrindavan, played with the cowherd boys and the gopis, and that's one level of understanding Krishna. But when you go into the higher level of understanding Krishna's position, as from the platform of the soul, Narayana, who is paro avyaktam, is above avyaktam, and his position is avyaktam is above the Brahmandam even. Brahmandam itself, the universe, what we are perceiving through our senses. We get the knowledge from this creation only. Whatever creation, you can see how our Elon Musk and his team is working very hard. when you see their activities, you see what Bhagavad Gita is saying about it, you can simply see how much illusion is influencing their way of thinking. They think that it's a big success if we can get to Mars or to Moon and things like that, isn't it? And they think that this is something to be explored in this way. Rishis never approved this process. They rejected this because they know that these senses are not good enough to get to know this creation. It is not possible. Simply not possible. And they realized it very early days itself in their search. And therefore they stopped that process of inquiry and they went into another method of finding out who we are. And they realized that if you find out who you are, this misunderstanding of this creation will leave us straight away. Because we don't know who we are. That is why we are looking for it outside all the time. That's a big thing. It will come in the Bhagavad Gita later when we discuss that. Yeah. So, Ajari Swami says here, Sa Bhagavan Srishtva Idam Jagat Tasya Sthitim Chikirshu Marichyadin Agre Srishtva Prajabadin Pravarti Lakshanam Dharmam Grahaya Masa Vedoktam. He is saying that after creation happened, in order to keep this creation going like this, He created this what they call as Prajapatis, Mariji, Atri, Angiras, Pulastya, Pulaha, Kradu, Vrigu, Vasishta, Daksha. They are all Prajapatis they are. So through Prajapatis creation happened, and through that Prajapatis, Krishna's plan was that through the Prajapatis, he introduced Pravarti Lakshanam Dharmam. Dharmam is the foundation of everything. So that Dharmam can be through Pravarti Lakshanam and Nivarti Lakshanam. Two ways it is spoken. Pravarti Lakshanam means Prajapatis are engaged in karma. So when there is karma vasana in people, the only process they can follow is the Pravarti Dharma. Pravarti Dharma for self-realization. Both Pravarti Dharma and Nivarti Dharma is for self-realization. Goal is always self-realization. There is no change at all. That goal remains as it is forever. From the Shastram point of view, life is meant for self-realization. That is the only way we will come out of this ignorance where we are now. Otherwise, what we will do is, we will keep on searching in this world where this has all come from. We will sometimes travel to Mars, sometimes to Moon, sometimes somewhere else. If we can find whether there is water there or whether there is plants there, all this madness will continue like this. But if we have to come out all these things, we have to start thinking the way rishis have thought about that. The great rishis, they have understood that the answer to all the problem is realize the self, who we are first of all. And we ourselves don't know who we are, and then we are trying to acquire knowledge. First of all, we don't even know who we are. And then we are trying to acquire knowledge of this creation. So there itself you can see that the very fundamentals of our research is wrong. Because when we don't know who we are, what are we searching? They are searching for other world, other planets, and trying to find out the origin of this creation and all that. But we don't even know who we are. This is our pathetic situation. Yeah. So therefore, one who thinks they are this body, whether it is Trump or Musk or somebody else, doesn't matter, but they are all thinking they are the body, and in that misunderstanding, they are trying to find the truth about this world, with this misunderstanding inside, not knowing who they are. So, Bhagavad Gita is making that situation very clear in the beginning itself, that creation is all so important. Important thing is first thing to know yourself who you are. And if you have realized that, you will understand what this creation is. And that is their process. Yeah. So, he says, so, originally, in the Bhagavad Gita, these two processes are spoken. One Pravarti Margam, other one is the Nivarti Margam. Pravarti Margam is through the Prajapatis, Mariji, Atri, Angiras, all the Prajapatis. And the Nivarti Margam through the four Kumaras, Sanaga, Sanandana, Sanadana and Sanatkumara. The four Kumaras they have, through them, they were Jnanis, liberated souls from the very beginning. So, that is why. So Kumaras accepted the Nivarti Margam and the Prajapatis accepted the Pravarti Margam. Pravarti Dharmam is what most of the people do in this life. We get only the very few fortunate ones will have the freedom to get out of this from the early days in life. Majority of us go through Pravarti Dharma. Right? And that includes all our activities in this world. Family life, job, and acquiring livelihood and things like that, and all our activities in this world, this is all a part of Pravarti Dharma, right? Nivarti Dharma is purely fixed in the spiritual life from the very beginning, and all those activities related to self-realization, in other words. That means one who has started spiritual life from the early days in life and who totally got established in that, in the self-realization process from the early days itself. That is Navruti Dharma. So, four Kumaras, they guided them in that path, in the Navruti Dharma. And the Prajapatis, they guided the people who were in the Pravruti Dharma. So, that those two differences, right? And the difference is, Pravruti Dharma is Behirmukham, outward looking. That means those who are involved in Pravruti Dharma, they will be busy in the world outside. Their mind and, mind and their thoughts will be very much in the world outside. Whereas Nivruti Dharma, the four Kumaras and their parambara, they will be more absorbed in the internal world, inside, inward looking, andar mukhatvam. One is Bahirmukhatvam, the outward looking, and the other one is inward looking. Andramukhatvam, right? So, divinohi vedavokto dharma pravrti lakshanam nivrti lakshanascha jagatasthiti karanam. So, in Vedam, dharma is spoken in two different ways. Dharma tattvam, right? One is nivrti lakshanam and the other one is pravrti lakshanam. In two different ways it's spoken, right? So, we know very well, we have talked about this before also, that the Vedam generally is divided into Karmagandam and Jnanagandam. Major division is like that, Karmagandam and Jnanagandam. So, Karmagandam is the one which is major part of the Vedam. Refers to all the yagam, sacrifices and everything. It's all in the Karmagandam. And then we have got the Upanishads later, which is the Jnanagandam, where all the spiritual tattvams are spoken. Tattva pradhanam, tattva jnanam is spoken through the Upanishads, right? So, Karmagandam, you know, I mentioned this before, if you remember all this, that the dividing Vedam is in different ways it's done. One, you know about the, we have the divisions for the benefit of Vedavyasa Maharshi to teach his disciples. He divided them into four. Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, Atharvanavedam, and taught four of his disciples. That's one way of dividing Vedam. Then we have another way of dividing Vedam as Mantram, Brahmanam, Aranyakam, Upanishads. For you can see the vastness of this literature, Vedic literature. Mantram for the brahmacharis, brahmanam for the grahasthas, aranyakam for the vanaprasthas, and Upanishads for the sannyasis. In that way also Vedam is divided. So Vedam, division of Vedam is in many, many different levels for different purposes. They have divided that. Now you find here, that the Karmagandam and Jnanagandam, out of those two, the Karmagandam's purpose was Chitta Shuddhi. That was the goal of Karmagandam. Because when you are engaged in karma, you get polluted. Vasanas develop. Once it has started, then your subtle body and the avidya increases in a person with the karma. That's the nature of karma. Even that is very difficult for most of the people to, the so-called modern civilization, which claims to have very advanced in knowledge. When you look at this from point of view, you can see all that the modern science has done and has increased our ignorance more and made us to realize that we are this more, that we are this body. That's all it has done. So, to become free from that is not easy. To come out of this misunderstanding of this body, right? So, from a subtle level, when you look at Vedam, Karmagandam is meant for purification, Chitta Shuddhi. Thereby, you become qualified for Jnanagandam, which leads to liberation. Karmagandam leads to Chitta Shuddhi, Jnanagandam leads to liberation. That is the basic thought behind it. This Pravrti Margam and Nivrti Margam. If there is already vasanas inside us, and those vasanas have become a cause of our getting more material bodies, one after the other, the only option he has got is to become free from the vasanas first. You remember in the Bhagavatam how many times vasanas were spoken. Yeah. So becoming free from vasanas is not easy. It takes many, many effort of many lifetimes to come out of the... Krishna says that, isn't it? Krishna will call that vasanas a swabhava. Yeah. Yeah. Swabhava vijayam shauryam, Krishna says. So becoming free from that swabhavam, and in the end of this 18th chapter, Krishna will repeat that again. Swabhava jayanta kaunteya, he says. It is all coming from swabhavam. And our whole life is nothing but fighting against this swabhava of what we have created ourselves. In going through different bodies, we have developed swabhavam. And that swabhavam is inside us. And we are not even conscious of what that swabhavam is. But sometimes when we think about ourselves, we can see our swabhava, what it is like, and where it's coming from. That vasana in a particular person, to act in a particular way. You can observe that in same problem, two people deal with it in two different ways. Why? Because of the difference in the swabhava, or in the vasanas inside. Swabhava vijayam shauryam. Krishna says, if you can beat your own swabhavam, then you are the hero, he says. So, so that is that chitta shuddhi, hriday shuddhi, fighting the swabhava. And karmagandam is meant for that. Some people have this misunderstanding, because if you only study the 10 offenses against chanting the holy name, you will think this whole rest of the Vedam is all useless. You may think like that because that's how it is worded there, that the karmagandam is all useless. Karmagandam is not useless. Karmagandam has a purpose behind it. So, but as you understand it better, you'll start seeing the importance of all these things. Why karmagandam is there in the Vedam? Because without that, purification is not possible. And it is this karmagandam in the Vedam, Krishna has transformed that into karma yogam in the Bhagavad Gita. Because of the modern times, the things have changed, Krishna has the freedom to make it more clear to us what that karmagandam means. But if you look back into the history, all the great kings, great personalities like Parikshit, Yudhishthira Maharaj, Mahabali, and so many others, Prajina Barhis, and every one of them, they were engaged in karmagandam for their own purification. So that means, at their time, karmagandam was in practice, but by the time Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has given a little bit more modification to that, to suit for the world, in the age of Kali, and made it as karma yogam in the Bhagavad Gita. So that's how that transformation happened from karmagandam to karma yogam. Principle it is the same, both are same. But depending on the type of people who are living at that time, and because they had the monarchy then, the kings were ruling, they could conduct the sacrifices. Now we have democracy, so democracy is no yagam, yam, nothing belongs to democracy. So that's the difference, right? So these two differences, jnana yogam, karma yogam, jnana yogam, the two important things in the Bhagavad Gita. And you can see that Krishna also says, jnana yogena sankhyanam, karma yogena yoginam. It is based on this understanding. There is not spoken about bhakti there. And the reason for that, I mentioned before also, bhakti is required in every yoga system. Whether you are following Ashtanga Yogam, whether you are following Raja Yogam, whether you are following Jnana Yogam, Karma Yogam, bhakti is an underlying current in everything. Without bhakti, no yoga process will work. So there is no need to talk about bhakti specifically for that. So that is the reason why Krishna has spoken in this way. Jnana yogena sanghyanam, karma yogena yoginam. He said that. Yeah. Then, I'll just continue with this introduction about this Bhagavad Gita, and then we will move on to the 18th chapter. Praninam sakshat abhyudayam nishrayasa hedu ya sa dharmo brahmanadhyer varnibhi ashramibhischa shreyo arthivir anushtiyamana. He says, in the path of varnashrama dharma, or in the path of pravritti dharma, when people are, because majority of the people will be in the pravritti dharma, Nivritti Dharmam, there will be only very few in this world, in the Nivritti Dharmam. Majority of the people will be in the Pravritti Dharmam. They'll have to work, and they will have to get married, they'll lead a household and life. You can say 95%, 99% will be Pravritti Dharmam. So for them, naturally when they live in this material world, to maintain the body, they will have to have a certain shanti inside to live a peaceful life here. And even in their material life, they want some happiness, material happiness, right? And at the same time, while living in this world with a certain amount of, a certain degree of material happiness, they will also like to have the a life after death where they don't degrade themselves further. After leaving this body, they want to go into a higher position than after leaving this world, right? So it is for that purpose Varnashrama Dharmam was spoken. And that Dharmam has to be followed by all, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, all of them, who wants happiness in this world and in the life after leaving this world, right? So generally when we say these four Varnam, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, along with that comes the ashramam also, Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastham and Sannyasam, right? So these two groups, Varnadharmam, Ashramadharmam, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, and Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastham and Sannyasam, all of them, according to their samskaram, they will engage in their activities in this world, and that is their dharma, Varnadharma. Yeah. And the result is that they will get the benefit from that, they will be peaceful in life, and they will maintain or achieve certain happiness in this world, as well as they become qualified for liberation later. Dirghena kalena anushtatranam kamodbhavat hiyamane viveka vijnana hetukena dharmena abhibhuyamane dharme pravardhamane cha dharme jagatasthitim parimalishu sa adikarta narayanakhya vishnu bhaumasya brahmano brahmanatvasya rakshanartham devakyam vasudeva amshena krishna kila sambhabhuva brahmanatvasya hi rakshadena rakshita syat vaidiyo dharmam tadhinatvat varnashrama bhedhanam. Ajahnya Swamiji's commentary in the Ubodgaram is saying that Varnashrama Dharma, when it started, it was in a good shape. Everyone followed their Varna and Ashrama, right? But what happens is, over a period of time, among the followers of Varnashrama Dharma, different desires started building up. Different kind of desire started building up, right? When that happens, you lose your, you don't adhere to the rules anymore. You start breaking the rules. Brahmanas will become Shudras, Shudras will become Brahmanas. This way they become, the crossover happens from one to another. And even though fundamentally, these differences, the four Varnam, will exist in this world. You won't be able to recognize them anymore. That stage has come. Who is who? Because everyone has broken the fencing and jumped over to the other side. So, what happens when you do that is, from the other side, people start jumping to this side also, when you break the fences. So, that's what he's saying here. Due to breaking of the law, related to what, when, you know, Krishna has spoken about this in the Bhagavad Gita. Shrayan Sudharmo Vigunan Paradharmal Sunushtita. Krishna says, following your own dharma is more important than doing somebody else's dharma better way. Even though you may do it better, it is not good, he says. So much importance Krishna has also given to that. It's there in the Bhagavad Gita. If you study it carefully, you will find all these things, right? So, in due course of time, desires developed in people's heart, so they started breaking the fence or breaking the law. And at that time, when Krishna saw this is happening, he came down himself, and with that he appeared as Vasudeva and Devaki's son, and he realized the importance of establishing dharma again, and he accepted, everybody accepted this, all rishis accepted, Krishna also accepted that the quality called the brahmanyam, brahmanatvam, is necessary to protect this dharma, vaidya dharma, right? So if brahmana dharma is functioning properly, then varnashrama dharma will survive, otherwise it won't. When the brahmana dharma goes away, varnashrama dharma will collapse, it cannot be protected. Yeah. So so brahmam means it is a commentary given like this, that the Vedam, Brahmanam, Yajnam, that is one explanation towards that, right? So you can, when you go through his commentary, you can see this, that Acharya Swamiji had no interest in protecting the Brahmanas of today, modern Brahmanas, right? That was not his goal behind it, right? Because he said this, Brahmam means not exactly Brahmana. On the other hand, Brahmam is not something what you can see through your eyes. You cannot perceive them through eyes, right? But one who has acquired knowledge of Brahmam, he is actually Brahmana. Brahma jana didi Brahmana. So Brahmana's qualification is this, that not based on birth alone or one who is... In the modern world, one who claims that he is a Brahmana. That's not how Brahmana, Acharya Swamiji has seen, right? What Acharya Swamiji says here is that this Vaidika Dharmam, in order to re-establish that, that was the purpose of Krishna's appearance, to establish the Vaidika Dharmam. Right? And that is what he explains in the next words. Sacha Bhagavan Jnana Aishwarya Shakti Balavidyati Jobi Sada Sambannaha Trigunal Migam Vaishnavim Swam Mayam Mola Prakrim Vashikrityajo Avyayo Bhudana Misharam Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Sobhavam Usi San So Maya Dehavan Iva Jada Iva Jaloga Nigraham Purvan Iva Lakshade. What he is saying is that Bhagavan, Krishna, his lakshanam are spoken there, symptoms, which is the six things Bhagavan means. Aishwaryam, Viryam, Yashas, Shri, Jnanam, Vairagyam, the six opulences, right? When that is in full, he is Bhagavan, right? And that Bhagavan, with the help of Maya, that Maya is nothing but three modes of material nature. Trigunatmika. Sattugunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam. And Maya is also called as Moola Prakriti. Very root cause of material nature. And with the help of that Maya, he, the same what we have talked before, Ishvara and Vidya Maya together. Ishvara and Vidya Maya. And when Brahmam is in contact with Vidya Maya, Ishvara comes from that. When Brahmam is in contact with Vidya Maya, Ishvara comes. When Brahmam is in contact with Avidya Maya, Jiva comes. So this is the basic difference between Ishvara and the Jiva. So, Ishvara is concerned, he has no birth or death, he remains as Ishvara always, and his swabhavam is Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. He is eternal, he is always pure, and he is always conscious, and he is always liberated. Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam, that is his swabhav, that is his nature, yes. And and but when he accepts a form, through Maya, for any incarnations to come, Maya has to get involved. With the help of Maya, it happens. But when Maya comes in, it appears as though he has taken birth. It appears as though he has got a body. Only it appears like that. Yeah. So when we see these different incarnations come, yeah, actually a lot of things about incarnations is unknown to us. Because these decisions are made in a very higher level. It's not even known to the ordinary rishis even. There are certain things, even in the Vedam, they will give you tell us clearly that there is no answer to that question. How many incarnations have come and why different incarnations are taken by the Brahman, Satchidananda Brahman, and when he takes a form like Malsyam, Kormam, Varaham, Narsimham, Vamanam and all that, it appears to us that these incarnations exist forever. As we said before, some of the incarnations stayed only for a short time. Some incarnations stayed for a very long time. For example, Krishna's form stayed 125 years. Ramchandra's form also stayed for a long time. Whereas Malsyam, Kormam, Varaham and all, only for a short period of time it appeared, right? Narasimham also, for a short period of time. So these are major incarnations, but apart from that, there are so many other incarnations also. So when we understand Krishna, if you simply think the form alone is the reality, Krishna, then Ajari Swamiji is saying that is because you are seeing only through Maya. We are not seeing the substance behind that. You will understand in Bhagavad Gita when you go a little deeper into it, what Krishna is saying, right? You can accept Krishna simply based on the form alone. That's fine. That's one level of accepting Krishna. But if you study Bhagavad Gita seriously, you will know that there is more to it than just that form. So that is why he says here that Krishna's form, what you are perceiving, which has come through Maya, and that form, if you accept as the reality, that's the Saguna Brahman. The Nirguna Brahman, which is behind that, is that that is actually Krishna's reality, is that. Yeah? That means that cannot be perceived through senses or the mind. Form can be perceived through senses, is it not? Our senses, you can perceive the form. Or through the mind, through the form. And the pastimes, you can perceive all that. But the reality Krishna is, which is Nirguna Brahman, Satchidananda Brahman, that is beyond that form even. In the 9th chapter, in the 11th verse, you will find this. Krishna has spoken this, right? We'll discuss that when we get to that chapter, because it's a lot of things in the Bhagavad Gita which is completely based on Krishna's identity. Who is Krishna? Right? So, prayojano avahavai bhutanuji krikshaya vaidigan dharmadvayam arjunaya shokamoha mahodhatav nimagnaya upadidesha gunadigarhi grihita anushtiyamanacha dharma prajayam gamishati iti. By giving Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, Arjuna was in a distressed condition, shoka moham, lamentation and illusion, two things Arjuna was in, right? So, keeping Arjuna in the front, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to him for the benefit of the whole world, and so that they know and what the truth is, and in that way they can follow the path of dharma. So, Ajari Swamiji says here that Arjuna was just a cause, but the idea behind this was to tell the world that what the knowledge means, what truth is, and if you want to realize the truth, this is the process. That was Krishna's goal of saying, speaking Bhagavad Gita, right?
Tum dharmam bhagavada yatopadishtam vedavyasa sarvatnyo bhagavan gita ke saptabi shloka shadai upanipavanda.
So, what Krishna has spoken, Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled that in the form of Bhagavad Gita in 700 verses, right?
Tadidam Gita Shastram samasta vedartha sara sangraha bhudam durvijnayartham.
He gave a very categorical statement there. Know what he said? He's saying, this Gita Shastram, science of Bhagavad Gita, is samasta vedartha sara sangraha bhudam. It carries all the message of the Upanishads, or the Vedic knowledge, but it is condensed so well. Samasta Veda Artha Sara Sangraha Bhudam. It is condensed so well. Durvijnayartham, he says, it is not easy to understand the Bhagavad Gita. Acharya Swamiji is saying this. It is not easy to understand Bhagavad Gita. Durvijnayartham, right? He himself says this. Acharya Swamiji himself says this. It's not easy to understand Bhagavad Gita. Now, Bhagavad Gita has got so many commentaries since then, is it not? And a lot of them have followed Acharya Swamiji's words as it is. And whatever they have understood, they have explained it in their own way. And even now, after so many 5,000 years, people still struggle to understand what is the right thing, what Krishna is saying about it, right? We'll come to that later.
Tadarthavishkaranaya anegai vivrutapadartha vyakhyartha nyayam avi atyanta virudha anegartha tvene laugigai grihyamanam ubalabhi aham vivegada artham urdharanartham samkshevada vivranam karishyami.
Ajay Swami says that Bhagavad Gita's meaning, many people have given different explanations, and they have explained sometimes word by word meaning, and the meaning of the sentences, right? And because of this, so many different interpretations of Bhagavad Gita, right? People understand Bhagavad Gita in many, many different ways, which you can see all the time, how people understand Bhagavad Gita. Some people use Bhagavad Gita for advertisement, isn't it? Like, you know, in India they have this Life Insurance Corporation. They use Bhagavad Gita. What do they call it? That not Yoga Muskavishalam. They have a slogan which is taken from the Bhagavad Gita word. And in their logo, they have put that in. And people think that they are also following Bhagavad Gita. So like this. And similarly, there are Yoga Ramas Kaushalam is another one. People have used that also. It's all from Bhagavad Gita statement. They will take one line, and because Bhagavad Gita is so authoritative, if you use that word, automatically whatever you say also become very authoritative. If you use that into your thing, isn't it? So that's how he's talking about here, right? So because it is like that, Bhagavad Gita's words have been used. Yoga Shemam Vahamiham, that's the word. Ananyas Chindayandomam Yejana Paribhasade Tesham Nityabhiyuktanam Yoga Shemam Vahamiham. So you can see, in spite of all the things what we say against Bhagavad Gita, when it want authority, you go to Bhagavad Gita again. So in order to make LIC, Life Insurance Corporation, authoritative, they took Yoga Kshemam Vahamyaham from Bhagavad Gita. Then they knew that it will sell. The policy will sell. Yeah. And today, people are doing exactly the same thing. Sannyasis and others going to these multinational corporations and telling them that Bhagavad Gita is for development of personality, and selling Bhagavad Gita to them also. Because once you say Bhagavad Gita is behind it, you are automatically become authorized. They know that. So sannyasis go and tell these multi-corporations, right, and teach them look, Bhagavad Gita is saying like this, you can become a good businessman through Bhagavad Gita. You become a good chief executive through Bhagavad Gita. This is all cheating. Total cheating this is. Bhagavad Gita has nothing to do with any of these things. Bhagavad Gita is a science of the soul. And it has to be understood and accepted in that way. Everything else is in making it mundane, very mundane topic. So, similarly you can see, based on Bhagavad Gita, so many institutions are running, so many courses, seminars, PowerPoint presentations, all sorts of things they do. And people who go there, they don't have time, they are busy people, aren't they? So they have no time for spiritual life. So naturally they think, if I do a 2-week course in one institution, I may probably come back self-realized. This is their misunderstanding. What can you do? This is how they... Even though Krishna says, in spiritual life there is no shortcut. If you want to do it in 2 weeks and 10 days and or on a 15 days seminar, a self-realization course, Krishna says, you just forget it. Don't waste your time. Go and do your work, whatever you are doing. Many times in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is stressing this point. One thing he said, shanai shanai ruparamet. You cannot have any shortcut in this. You have to give time and work according to Krishna's injunctions, instructions. You have to follow that process, what he has spoken. That you cannot compact it, you cannot compress it and make it a 2-week course or a 3-week course. It's not going to help very much. You can get a certificate after that and hang it up, saying that you have done this course. Beyond that, in self-realization, you won't move 1 inch further with that. So that's another thing to note. And then Krishna also said this, this self-realization may not be even for one lifetime. Aneka janma samsiddhim, tebi yadi parangadim. He says, unless you escape from the cycle of birth and death, your spiritual life is not finished till you escape from the cycle of birth and death. And that may take a few lifetimes. When Krishna has said all these things, our so-called swamis and yogis and all, they start all these courses and seminars, and this is also wasting time. Their time and others' time as well. It's not going to help. So keeping all these things in the background, if you look at it this way, that the goal of Bhagavad Gita is to get out of this cycle of birth and death once for all. You don't have to accept another material body again, right? The reason to understand why we are suffering in this world. Why do we suffer in this world? Because we have got a body, human body or whatever body we have, right? And to find out the reason why we got this body and to get free from this accepting another body. Once for all, to come out of this cycle of birth and death is the goal of Bhagavad Gita. Nothing else. Nothing else, right? And that can happen only through yoga process, and that is what this different yoga process is all about, right? And following the process of dharma, and which is based on the atma, soul. Tatha imam eva gīdārtha dharmam uddishya bhagavata eva uktam sahi dharma supariyapto brahmanam padavedane iti anigīdāso. So this is Bhagavad Gita's dharma, the principle, and Krishna is saying here that this brahmam is realization, is enough to become free from the cycle of birth and death, right? So you can see, take Bhagavatam now and have a look what our Parikshit Maharaj had from Sri Shuka Brahmarshi at the end. Remember? 12th canto, 5th chapter, Brahmavadesham was given. And with that, Parikshit's accepting another body was over. Once for all, he got released from the cycle of birth and death. After the Mahabharata war, Krishna was staying in Hastinapur with Arjuna. And that time, Krishna spoke to Arjuna again further things. It's called in Mahabharatam Anugida. A part comes later. Anugida, right? Why this Anugida was spoken was, Arjuna forgot Bhagavad Gita after the Mahabharata war. After the Mahabharata war, Arjuna forgot Bhagavad Gita. So one day he told Krishna that you tell me what you have told me, I have forgotten all that, what you said. He said. So because it was given later on, it is called Anugida, and this Anugida was nothing but an extension of the Bhagavad Gita. Right? So, and this Anugida also, Acharya Swamiji has given a commentary on that. Kimcha anyadabhi tatrava uktam naiva dharmina charmi na chaivahi shubhashubhi na yasya alayasane lina sasushnim jita jindayin. So, and then, after that, it comes in the Mahabharata, all those things. Mahabharata is so vast. And then he said, there he mentioned that, jnanam sannyasa lakshanam. Sannyasam is jnanam, knowledge. Yeah, and at jnanam also he mentioned there as the in another way Krishna says sarva dharman parityajya verse in the 18th chapter 66th verse, right? So ihi iha abhija ande uktam arjunaya sarva dharman parityajya mamegam sharanam raja. Right. So, pravarti dharmam, which means varnashrama dharmam, everything, is for those who are following varnashrama dharmam, which is part of the sanadana dharmam, varnashrama dharmam. Right. That may help us for our material happiness. And as well as after leaving this body, we may go into a higher position than from this world, right? fundamental principle in that is that if you are able to execute karma without expectation of results from that, that's our big problem, isn't it? Any karma we do, we want results. If there is no results, we have no interest in the karma. So karmam and karma bhalam, they are very closely connected to each other. It's in us. And when we have, when we engage in karmam, karmam brings few problems, is it not? First thing is, it creates ragadvesham. If you are attached to results of the karmam, and if you don't get the results, what you wanted, dvesham comes. And if you do get a good result from the karmam, ragam will come. So you can see the problem. Karmam creates ragadvesham. It is accepted by all the great acharyas. Karmam creates ragadvesham, especially if there is sangam, attachment. So that is the reason when Krishna is saying in the second chapter, Ragadvesham vimuktaistu vishayan indriyaischaran. If you want to become from Ragadvesham, you have to become free from this effect of karma. Another aspect of karma means aham karta, aham bhokta. Me and mine will come from that. Ragadvesham will come from that. Me and mine will come from karma. So karma, you know now what karma has done to all of us, isn't it? Several lifetimes engaged in karma, and even in this lifetime, engaged in karma, is deep down inside us, ragadvesham and me and mine. They are deeply inside everyone. And it is especially those who are in the pravarti dharma. It will be there, right? So, the principle, very, very fundamental principle of karma yoga is this, that if you are able to execute karmam without getting attached to the results of the karmam and able to offer the results to Krishna, that way you will get purified. If you do that for a long period of time, which is called karma yogam, and if you execute karmam in that way, giving everything to Krishna, the results, and Krishna, accepting that Krishna is doing everything through our mind and body and the senses, And in the total surrender to Krishna, if the karmam is executed, then that karmam will purify us and you'll become free from, chitta shuddhi will come from that. It is at that time you become eligible for jnanam or bhakti, not before that. So karma yogam is a stepping stone to spiritual life. Karma yogam is a stepping stone to spiritual life. But, so these things were taken into account when it was commented in the beginning. But later on, as I said, Mahatma Gandhi and Bal Gangadhar Tilak and all that, they were big leaders at the time of independence. They made this more into the karma yogam aspect of it. Yeah. Shuddha sattvasya jnananishta yogyata prapti dvarena jnanolpatti hedutena cha nishraya satyam api pratipadyate. A person who has developed chitta shuddhi or purification of the mind, he is eligible for receiving transcendental knowledge. That will work for him. It will have its impact on him. Otherwise not. Otherwise we will hear, go through the other. Tathaja imam artham, eva artham, abhisandhaya vakshari, brahmanyadhaya karmani, yogina karma kurvandi sangam tektualpa shuddhaya idi. So it is for this purpose in the 5th chapter, 10th and 11th verses in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will say this, that great yogis, they perform all the karmam with this state of consciousness, right, for the sake of purification. Then he said, this Gita Shastram, imam dvipragaram dharmam, nishrayasa prayojanam, paramartha tattvam ca vasudevakyam, parabrahma abhideya bhudam, visheshada abhivyanjayet, visishta prayojana sambandham abhidevat Gita Shastram. So, Ajari Swami mentions there that the because it talks about dharmam and it has got this special benefit, it has this connection with dharmam and this opinion about that, and that tattvam, what is realized through all these things at the end, it is also called Vasudeva. Yada tadartha vijnani samasta purushartha siddhi adara divirane yatna kriyate maya. So, one thing he concluded saying this, that if you understand the Bhagavad Gita, the subtle things in the Bhagavad Gita, right, all purushartham, dharmam artham, kamam moksham will come. So, he said that I'm going to talk about that in the next many chapters. So, this is the introduction for Bhagavad Gita from Ajahn Samji, right? Let's go into this 18th chapter. First, we'll start from there. Because you're all familiar with Bhagavad Gita to a large extent, isn't it? So, Esham Hadisto Bhagavan Mangalaya Dano Hari. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said many things, right? So many things Krishna has spoken there. And every time when you read one verse, you will think that this is what Krishna wants me to do. And you read another verse, then you think, oh, this is what Krishna wants me to do. So, we got to read Bhagavad Gita in such a way that we should be able to extract from that what is beneficial for individually, for each one of us in spiritual life. And that is our job. We have to do that. Krishna has spoken the science of the soul elaborately and in condensed form, but very precisely spoken. But due to our conditioning of thinking, we have a nature like that, isn't it? We want one answer for everything. We are comfortable with that. After hearing Bhagavad Gita, some people will say, tell me what you want me to do now. We'll ask like that. Because I don't understood what Krishna is saying. He's saying so many things. Sometimes he says karma yogam, sometimes he says jnana yogam, sometimes he says bhakti yogam, sometimes he says raja yogam, sometimes he says some other yogam. And in this way, all this yogam is spoken. Remember I mentioned this before, when Vivekananda went to America, right? For days together he was talking about karma yogam. And he glorified karma yogam to such a level, everybody thought karma yogam is the answer for all their doubts, right? Typical Western mind working. And then for many days, he spoke about Bhakti Yogam and said, Bhakti Yogam is the highest of all. That was spoken for a few days. And then he comes and talks about Jnana Yogam for a few days. After all this, one lady who was attending all the lectures came out and said to Vivekananda that, you have confused me completely, he said. For first few days you were telling me about Karma Yogam. Then for a few days you said that that was the highest of all. And then when you started talking about Bhakti Yogam, you said there is nothing higher than Bhakti Yogam. And then when you started Jnana Yogam, you said this is it. Everything. Now what are you supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? He said. So this is the problem. With most of the people have this problem. That they think, what should I do? These three yoga processes, main ones, the three. Bhagavatam also, these three main ones. Jnanam, Karmam, Bhakti. And then apart from that, there are other yogas also. Ashtanga Yogam is there. And Raja Yogam is spoken. So altogether, everyone who reads Bhagavad Gita is getting nowhere. What am I supposed to do with all this? And whereas we like one word, preferably one line, in one word, if we can get an answer, we are happy with that. Because it's too much to go through all these things, everything, right? So it is this background you have to remember always, that Bhagavad Gita is a science of the soul. Science of the soul, right? And this problem is not only with Bhagavad Gita. Buddha had the same problem. When Buddha realized the self, all his disciples went up to him and started asking questions to him. He said, what should I do? He says, you have to find out yourself, he said to him. I have found out my own way. You have to find out your own way. That's the way it is. Spiritual life is like that. Because individually, all of us are different. Our prarabdham is different. Vasanas are different, and the circumstances we live, our subtle bodies are different. If you have to take this all into account when you are making a decision. And you have to know yourself what you need in spiritual life. The goal is defined clearly. Cycle of birth and death, we have to get out. But now, if you look at our own conditions, some of us are in the male body, some of us are in the female body. Some of us are old, some of us are young. So each one of us have to deal with spiritual life in a different level. And our understanding of life, our realizations are all different, each one of us. So unlike in other Semitic religions and all that, in Sanatana Dharmam, you won't get an answer like that. If you ask a question and you want an answer in that way, that suitable for everybody, one process, suitable for everyone. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. This has to be developed, and that is what spiritual life is all about. Finding about yourself at the end. What you're supposed to do in this world. And that is where inquiry begins. Inquiry begins, right? But a lot of things necessary to help us in our investigation is Bhagavad Gita. What is required for that? But realizing the self is our duty. And Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam is to help us in that process. Bhagavatam tells us about all the great personalities who followed the different processes and made it a success. You can see that Parikshit, Jarabharata, Rishabhadev, Gopis, Akrura, Uddhava. They are all different personalities, and they all followed differently the process. They all followed in a different way. But goal was same for everybody. They all had the same goal at the end, to become free from the cycle of birth and death. But they all practiced differently. They all took the knowledge from the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna's instructions, right? So here, Ajari Swami says, Samastha Vedartha Sara Sangraha Bodham. This is the nature of the Sanatana Dharma, is like that. Yeah? And So, Ajari Swami said like this about Bhagavad Gita, Samastha Vedartha Sara Sangraha Bhutam, if you remember that word, right? And he said that if you want to know what Vedam is all about, it is enough if you study Bhagavad Gita. He said you will get to know what Vedic knowledge is, right? Because Vedartham, the message of Vedam, is condensed to form spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. Now, if you look into 15th chapter, we are now going to talk about 18th chapter, right? But in the 15th chapter itself, when 18th chapter began, Acharya Swamiji began like this. Sarvasya eva Gita Shastrasya Artha Asmin Adhyaye Upasamhritya Sarvaja Vedartho Vaktavya Iti Evam Artham Ayam Adhyaya Arabhyade. He says that I'm going to start this chapter, 18th chapter, right, in order to conclude the summary of Gita Shastra, Bhagavad Gita Shastra, a summary of that, right, and also to give you an explanation of the Veda Artham, message of the Vedam, in a condensed form. And he said, Sarveshvapi Adhiteshu Adhyayeshu Uktaha Artha Asmin Adhyaye Avagamyade Arjuna Tu Sanyasa Tyaga Shabdhartyo Eva Vishesham Bubulsu Uvacha. Everything what was spoken in the previous chapters, last 17 chapters, a summary of that is in this 18th chapter. Right? And two words particularly, Sanyasam and Tyagam. Right? Arjuna says, I cannot understand these two words properly. So Arjuna had question about sannyasam. What does sannyasam mean? Right? And what does tyagam mean? Tyagam generally means you are sacrificing. Sacrificing something is called a tyagam. So Arjuna says, what is the difference between this sannyasam and tyagam? Normally sannyasis are supposed to give up everything, isn't it? Tyagam. So, what is the difference between Tyagam and Sannyasam? Arjuna was asking that question. Right? So, he says here, after saying this, that this chapter begins like this. Everything that was discussed in previous chapters comes in this chapter, in summary, right? Arjuna asked this question, what does sannyasa means? Arjuna is asking this question. So from that you can understand that Arjuna was not used to the sannyasis we are used to in his time. Because Arjuna himself took sannyasam once, you know that. Just to marry Subhadra. He took sannyasam, didn't he? So that means obviously sannyasam was a word which was very much in a misunderstood state, even then. So Arjuna took sannyasam because he knew what he wanted. He wanted to marry Subhadra, so he decided to take sannyasam. And Krishna said, you take sannyasam, you'll be alright, he said. And you come over, and I'll set it up everything for you, and you can marry Subhadra. Balram has arranged the marriage for Duryodhana, to marry Subhadra. And Subhadra didn't want to marry Duryodhana. And Arjuna did want to marry Subhadra. And Krishna helped Arjuna, and Balaram was a bit upset in the beginning that he wanted to marry his disciple. Duryodhana is his disciple, isn't it? So disciple couldn't marry Subhadra. Instead, Krishna changed the whole thing through sannyasam. He used sannyasam for that. And in that process, Arjuna became a sannyasi temporarily. Temporary sannyasam he took for a short period of time. So, like this, sannyasam is a confusing thing for everybody, right? So, this chapter is, when Arjuna asks this question, what is sannyasam means and what tyagam means? Tyagam means sacrifice. What does it mean, right? And this chapter is Krishna's answer for that. Sannyasam and tyagam, right? People don't like this word sannyasam, you know, because sannyasam means nobody wants to become a sannyasi. Reason is that sannyasam, you can see sannyasi's life is difficult. Normally it is difficult. They have to give up a lot. Okay, in institutions you get some respect and all that, if you are a sannyasi. and you get some prasadam in advance, and you get respected and, you know, things like that. But apart from that, if you are not a sannyasi in any institution, no one cares for you. And you will be on your own in this world. You haven't got a family life, you haven't got a social life, you haven't got anything. You are on your own trying to live in this world. For a sannyasi is difficult, right? So after this 18 chapters, Ajari Swamiji says, sannyasam means jnanam. Jnanam sannyasa lakshanam, he said. And in other words, knowledge of the self is sannyasam as far as he is concerned. Right? If you go back and look into Bhagavad Gita in the beginning, the fifth chapter is also titled as Sannyasa Yogam. Fifth chapter is also Sannyasa Yogam. Right? Here, this chapter is titled as Moksha Sannyasa Yogam. Fifth chapter is called Sannyasa Yogam. This 18th chapter is called Moksha Sannyasa Yogam. Only a small change in the title, right? Meaning, both means the same thing. Fifth chapter what's saying? This 18th chapter saying, right? What that means is, a man's life, right, comes to an end at some point in time, right? Before we die, before we leave this world, an older person should look back into his life and think, what should I do now before death comes? It is that period at the end of life when one has, most of our life is now over, isn't it? In the modern setup, it is like this, you get your pension and then you go on holidays. This is the modern way of retirement. It's like that, is it not? You work hard whole life, you earn a lot of money, and then you get your pensions, and they'll only ask you how much is your pension pot. This is the only question. And you have enough money to go on holidays, then you keep booking your cruises and everything, and finish your life like that and go. That's another type of life. Spiritual life is not like that. Spiritual life means that, Krishna is saying this, that at a certain point in life, you stop working. And you evaluate your own life. Where am I now? What is my situation? Yeah? And at that time, that means you are recognizing that your life is coming to an end. First thing. Your life is coming to an end. Right? And that is the time the thoughts of sannyasa must come to an end, mind of a person. Right? So, first of all, we have to understand this word sannyasa, what that means. Nyasam means tyagam or sacrificing. That's what's called nyasam means, tyagam, right? Tyagam means giving up or renouncing things, leaving things, renunciation, whatever you call it, right? So, another meaning to that is to take things and leaving it somewhere, everything in life, yeah? That means you have lived a life in this world, you have seen the life in this world, what it is, what it's on offer, and having gone through householder life, wife, children, acquiring money, this, that, everything, and then you are evaluating that, now what is next now? What do I have to do now? I've done through all these things, right? So samyak nyasam means leaving things where it has to be left. Leaving the things where it has to be left. Right? And making the life, bringing it to an order at the last minute. Bringing the life into an order. Order means all these years in our youth, middle age, and even sometimes the old age also, we lived a life based on the demands from the world, householder life, demands from family, demands from the children, and meeting those requirements. That means your life was centered around others. Centered around others, right? Here comes a point that you have done all that throughout life, You have to think about yourself and making your life in order. Till now you are making others' life in order. For so-called family. Making their life in order. That's what you are doing all these years. But a time comes in life when you have to make your own life in order. And that is what is sannyasam begins. At that time. So, in order for that, to get at this point in time in life, to make it in order, one has to start that work from the very beginning. Very early in life, you have to start to doing this. Otherwise, at this point in time, it may not be possible to do it. Because the whole life has eaten you away completely. And you don't have any strength inside to put your own life in order. That happens to many people. And that is why then they say, what can we do? The old age has come now. And you cannot make any decisions of your own. And you are completely affected by the forces working around us. And that is dragging us, right? So, basically what it is saying, to bring everything in an order in life, or a discipline in life, for that one has to work from the very beginning. That means this householder life that has come in our life, it should come and it should go without hurting us too much. Because at this age in life, one can easily understand that this is not a permanent business, this householder life. Householder life has come at a certain time in your life, and at a certain time it will leave you also. In the same way it has come, it will go. So at that point only you'll start realizing that you are on your own and you have to do it on your own. So it is that preparation for that, it is for that purpose that one should keep this in mind even from early days. That one day will come like this and one has to be prepared for that. To put his own life in order in a disciplined way, right? But what happens to most people is that when these thoughts come of spiritual life and some ideas about spirituality comes to them, sometimes people think, maybe I will go for a meditation class. So many meditation classes are arranged, isn't it? It's available, right? Or sometimes this pranayama business, right? Pranayama classes are going on for 15 days or 2 weeks. I'll do a course. And they are thinking that if I do all that, I could become a Sri Shuka Brahmarshi or Ramana Maharshi, somebody like that. Yeah, but we know that in Adhyatmam, in spiritual life, none of them will work. Yeah, in spiritual life, there is no shortcut. First of all, we must know that. In all other, in material life, you can do a lot of shortcut, isn't it? People do a lot of shortcut, different things. You can get things done in a quicker way by different courses, seminars and all that. But in spiritual life, there is no shortcut. There is no shortcut, right? In Adhyatmam means spiritual life, you have to go inch by inch. That's the only way it will work, right? And and Krishna also said that, Shanai Shanai Ubramet. Right? So, So, self-realization is the exploration process for that, and you have to use a whole life in that process, right? And you have to see it as a lifelong effort. Spiritual life as a lifelong effort, right? You should not think that I've read a book one day. Suddenly you read a book and you think that I've understood everything now about spiritual life. It won't work like that, right? You know Lord Buddha, after realization happened to him, he went and sat underneath the Bodhi tree. It's still there in Bodhi Vriksha, in Gaya. It is still there. He went and sat underneath the tree, right? So this happened on a Purnami day, full moon day, this happened. So some people said that if I'll also go and sit underneath the Bodhi tree on a full moon day, I will also realize the truth, and people started doing that, following Buddha. But it won't happen like that, yeah? And because the enlightenment, what Buddha had, happened after several years of effort and practicing spiritual life. This was happening within him, but many others were not aware of that. Even his own disciples. They were only seeing that body outside, Buddha's body. What was going on inside Buddha, they were not conscious of that. So he had a few close disciples who were working with him and following him. And some of them asked Buddha at the time that, why have we not realized anything? You say you have realized the truth, but we haven't realized anything. Why don't you give it to us? So Buddha told them that you must have done something all these years. You are following me, but you are not doing what I was doing. he was in the process of mananam nididhyasanam, all that he was doing based on the Upanishad's knowledge. He was practicing it. They were not doing anything. They were busy thinking that Buddha will give it to them. He said, nobody will give anything to anybody, he said. You have to get it yourself. So, nothing will happen like that. So what I'm saying is, Bhagavad Gita makes us aware what is spiritual life is. That's the first thing, right? What does Bhagavad Gita mean? Bhagavad Gita means that it is spiritual life. It's nothing but spiritual life, right? One Mahatma used to say, if you simply chant the word Gita, 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 Gita all the time, you will get some benefit from that. Why? Gita, if you keep repeating, what does it mean? Tyagam, tyagam, it becomes. Gita, 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 tyaga, 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 it becomes like that. Yeah? So tyagam is the science behind it, giving up things. How to become free from all entanglement. Yeah. So, tyagam means becoming free from all bondage. Yeah, that is the science in the Upanishads. Upanishads talks about that. And so many things Upanishads talks about: ahimsa, then truthfulness. And after all that, Upanishad says, kim tad paramam tava? Out of all that, what is the greatest, right? And what is tapasar? Step by step, the inquiry goes on. And Mahanarayana Upanishad says this, right? And life is not that what you achieve in life, that is not the success in life. What you achieve in life, yeah? Instead, how far you can become free from everything. That is the success of life. This is the Upanishad's principle. You know, spiritual life and material life, what the big difference is? In material life, normally, we want to be in the front of everything, isn't it? We want to be on the top, as we say. And that's what is taught in the schools, in colleges, in everything, business. In every field in life, in material life, we want to be on the top of everything. In spiritual life, it's exactly the opposite. We don't want to be on the top of anything. That's a way to become free from this. And this is a big difference. That is where the difficulty is. That is why those who are materially very successful, they will become find it very difficult in spiritual life. Because they are used to that way of thinking. Becoming on to be on the top of everything. Sometimes devotees also like that. They have taken spiritual life and then they want to be in the front of everything. And they think that that is their success. Unfortunately not. Success in spiritual life is when you become free from all the bondage. Nothing is binding you anymore. You have become free. Nothing is disturbing your mind. No desires are coming in and total shanti is inside. That's the proof of your success in spiritual life. You can see, it's a wide difference between the two, material life and spiritual life. Material life is all based on this, on the top everything. Everything, number one. You have to be number one in the friend, in everything. Success, success, success. That's all they have taught us in the schools and colleges. And that becomes your own vasana inside. Once that vasana is very strong inside, then it becomes very difficult because exactly opposite is spiritual life. That is the problem, right? So, why it is so? Let's understand that, yeah? So, whatever you have acquired in life, right, or what you have become successful in life, right, that is not important. Why? Because how you can live in this world with the very minimum, with what all without you can manage here. Without anything, if you can manage and get through this life, your spiritual life is a success. Right? That means, it's not that you are giving up things. Not that you are giving up things, right? That has got a problem. Suppose you give up certain things on your own, that will cause problems. Why? Because whatever you give up, those things that may be material objects or persons or some emotions, whatever you have inside. Suppose you have forcefully given it up, right? It will still stay inside you as a thought wave, as a vasana. It will stay inside. Suppose you have given up so many things in life, you decided to give up. I give up this, I give up that, so many things, right? But it won't go away. It will still stay inside me in the form of a vasana, right? So, externally, you may be able to give up things. But it has not left you. It is still there. Externally, you have forced yourself to give up certain things. This tattvam, you must remember all the time. This is very important in Bhagavad Gita, this principle, right? What Krishna is talking about. Externally, you may succeed in giving up things. Sometimes people think, oh, because of my attachment to this thing, I'm having problems, so I have given it up. Like that, right? But they won't go. Everything what you have given up will still remain inside you as a vasana inside. This is the tattvam behind it, right? So whatever you have given up that way, it will remain, stays back within you, right? But instead, if things you felt that you don't need it anymore, they won't cause any problems. That is called vairagya. Yeah? That means suppose you feel, you know, these things are very subtle in Bhagavad Gita. That is not in the book's commentary, all these things. Because commentaries won't write these things. It's difficult also to write in the book all these times. Certain things what Krishna has spoken is too subtle. You study Bhagavad Gita, you study Ekadasham, then you will understand what Krishna is saying there. So Krishna's point is this, whatever you give up, that will not go away. That will stay within you. But what you felt you don't need anything anymore, you have no attraction for it. If it happens that way, that won't cause any problems. That's the real way to leave things, right? So, what you don't, suppose you have no attraction for something, that means the attraction must go from inside. For anything. Anything in material life, people also same thing, with other people in the same way. So, vairagyam when Krishna talks about is in this level. Then you are feeling that all these attachments I have, I don't need it. What do I need that for? Why? Through knowledge you are realizing that your actual identity has no connection with any of these things. Because normally, if you look in this world, you look at our own attachment individually, right? It's attachment to matter only, mostly. Either to a name and form, a person, or wealth, what you have acquired in life, and things like that, or some people's case attachment to family, some people's attachment to the country, some people's case attachment to different things in life. Yeah. So all these attachments is based on a desire inside to keep a contact with that object, whatever it may be, and even though that connection is not helping you in spiritually anyway. The reason for that is, spirit soul does not require any of these things. From our platform of the soul, if you look at it, after all, we are individually pure Chaitanyam we are, isn't it? Bodham, awareness, consciousness we are. Consciousness doesn't require any of these things for its own happiness. Happiness comes from its very nature is happiness. Antaryami's very nature is happiness. Antaryami doesn't require all these things what we have developed for our happiness. It doesn't require that. But when that avidya goes away from inside, we realize that all these attachments and connections with this world, what we have developed in ignorance, is unnecessary for us. When that awareness comes inside, your attraction for them goes away automatically, and that will work. That's the only way it will work. Forcefully, if you give up attachment, it won't work. But through realization of the self, you have to become free from this attachment. That's what he's talking about, right? So, in order to do that, you have to have this knowledge inside, and that knowledge should work for you. Otherwise it won't happen, right? So when the knowledge is perfect inside, the realization is good, right? Then you will know there is nothing to be given up. Because it's not yours, first of all. And since giving up is just a word only, right? So something what I don't require, I don't have to give up. What I don't require, I don't have to give up, right? So, and what I do want something what I do want, and if I give up that, it won't go. It will stay inside me as a vasana. As a vasana inside. Therefore, important thing is, outside things, holding on to them, and or leaving them is not the important thing. There's nothing to take, nothing to leave, right? And nothing to be given up. The real knowledge is what Krishna calls it as samyak jnanam. And Krishna calls it as sannyasam, jnanam, sannyasa lakshanam, right? So if proper knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita comes in a person, then he will not, doesn't have to give up anything, right? What we need in life is Krishna. What we need is Krishna or Brahman. Or another word used is Atma, the soul. It's one and the same thing. We are addressing in three different ways. Antaryami, Atma, or Krishna, or Brahman, whichever way you call that, right? And that Krishna is present inside all of us as Antaryami. And he is there permanently with us as he is, right? And he is the greatest wealth what we have got. Krishna's presence inside. Right? And there is no need to inquire about him elsewhere, outside. Right? And that is why in Vishnu Sahasranamam you will find this word Mahabhuto Mahanidhi. That's the word used in the Sahasranamam. They use that word Mahabhudo Mahanidhi, he says that. That particular Vishwasasam is nothing but a Bhagavad Gita's another commentary on that. So 86th verse. Suvarna Bindra Akshobhya Sarva Vagishireshwara Mahahrado Mahavgartho Mahabhuto Mahanidhi. Referring to the soul, Krishna. Mahabhuto Mahanidhi, that's the word used there, right? So, he is addressed as Mahabhutam. Vishnu Sahasranam is as subtle as Bhagavad Gita is, in the same way, yeah? So, Bhutam, Bhu means our existence, Astitvam, it's called, right? So, Krishna is present inside, Chaitanyam, Andaryami inside, right? We say about someone that there is life in that person, Jiva, he is present inside, right? So, this Chaitanyam, or the living force present in someone, that Chaitanyam is addressed as Mahabhutam, right? And that Mahabhutam is Mahanidhi, Mahanidhi, right? And it is the greatest treasure of everything, what we have got. That's all what we have got. Krishna, who is present inside as Antaryami, that is the only wealth what we have. All other things is not ours. This body is not ours. This will also go one day, say goodbye and go. The mind is also not ours. Because that has come from that Mahabhutam, Mahanidhi, from him. Intelligence is also not ours. That will also go. The ahankaram inside us also will go one day. Then what is left then? It's only Krishna inside. So that's the only thing that is with us, which gives us the feeling of our existence. Right? So, so therefore, that Mahanidhi or Mahabhutam, what is present inside, doesn't have to be searched after, looked outside anywhere to find it, right? And it does not come from outside, it's already inside, yeah? So therefore, everything what we need is to realize that that is what we are and that doesn't require anything else from outside, yeah? That means, Antaryami inside is our identity actually. And that Antaryami doesn't require anything from outside, including this body, mind, intelligence or anything. To come to that realization is the most difficult part. And that is self-realization. That means becoming free from the body, freedom from the body, freedom from the mind, freedom from the intelligence, freedom from the senses, and freedom from the everything else. And that freedom what you get is self-realization, right? And once we realize this properly, then the mind naturally comes to the state of Shanti. What Krishna says is Shanti. You know in Bhagavadam, it is spoken, Tadapara Shanti Mubaydi. So Shanti is the state what we are actually looking for. Sukhrutam sarvabhudanam yatvamam shanti mruchari. Krishna's point is this in Bhagavad Gita. Realize the self and reach the state of shanti. That is the perfection. So everywhere in the Bhagavad Gita you will find Krishna talking about shanti. Tameva sharanam gacha. Sarvabhave talparal param shantim sthanam prapsesi shashvatam. He says. So shanti is what Bhagavad Gita is talking about. That shanti. Shanti state, and that Shanti state means realizing the self, right? So, so initially you start with the theory behind it and keep going, and at the end, gradually when this Shanti comes inside, little by little, automatically the mind will stop going to the world outside, and mind will become more and more closer to the self, Antaryami inside, and get established there, right? And this is all Bhagavad Gita is talking about, right? So, here also in the Bhagavad Gita, In the Vishnu Sahasranam also, he says this in another way. If you look into the 62nd verse, he says, Trisama samaga sama nirvanam beshajam bishaka sanyasa krishrama shando nishta shandi parayana. Again, the same thing what Krishna has spoken there in the Bhagavad Gita, right? So, Bhagavad Gita, it is a commentary of Bhagavad Gita, is on the Vishnu Sahasranama, 1000 names of Vishnu. That is why Bhishma spoke about it to Yudhishthira in the battlefield before he left this world. You know that famous thing in the Mahabharata, right? So I think we'll stop there today. We'll continue tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.